It was early summer, 2011, in northern Japan. A local cab driver pulled up to a public transit area and picked up a young woman. The cab driver noted her long, heavy coat. His special attention to this was attributed to the time of year. It was summer and very warm. The woman entered the cab and asked to be taken to a nearby location. The driver replied, stating, "That area is mostly empty now. Is that okay?" As he started the meter and began to drive, there was a palpable silence, followed by the woman's suddenly shivering voice asking, "Have I died?" This question caused the cab driver to turn and look at her. But to his surprise, she had vanished from the back seat. This account is one of several documented by university student Yuka Kudo. Kudo was hearing about many ghost sightings in the area following the devastating earthquake and tsunami which struck earlier that year. This disaster claimed the lives of nearly 20,000 in sheer moments. Months later, accounts eerily similar to that of this cab driver were getting around. Kudo decided to write her thesis on this topic. Many drivers would not speak on the subject, but more than seven came forward with their accounts of ghostly passengers. Kudo notes how compelling these stories are due to the fact that the cab drivers have their receipts to back up claims, aligning with each night they picked up their ghost fare. Their meters were started, and their fares left unpaid. Each driver notes the ghost riders were young adults. Each noted a level of confusion from the passenger as they asked to be taken to areas that were no longer. Are disaster sites more active or primed for paranormal occurrences? Welcome to Fright Life, a paranormal podcast. We're your hosts, Monique Rose
and Joss Rose.
And this episode is about hauntings in areas of great tragedy.
First of all, that is terrifying. Like, listening to your story about the cab driver who has a person jump in his cab and then they're vanished.
Yeah. There are several cab drivers with this story. And they're not the same ghost. They all encounter different people.
Whoa. So it's not like the legend of the woman in
right.
the heavy coat.
Right.
Like,
no, one of them was a young male, different cab driver. Who asked to be taken to a residential address. The cab driver got there, like, started the meter, drove with this man in the back seat, got to the address, and as he was pulling up, he noticed that the house had basically been leveled
by the tsunami. Yeah.
And the man was no longer in the back seat. One asked to be taken to a nearby mountain area and vanished during the car ride. And all of these drivers have to pay the fare because they're, like, unpaid. So it's kind of like if someone walks out on a check
right.
at a restaurant. So they wouldn't just be, like, I mean, I don't know how expensive it is. It just seems odd that they would be, like, have all of the, you know, they have this these receipts to back it up.
Right.
Like, they started the fare. They had to end up paying for the fare because
right.
the ghost,
what would be the
like,
motive
right.
to do that if they have to pay out of pocket for that?
Right, so it's super strange, it's compelling, it's like they have documentation.
Yeah.
And that's what Kudo thought was so interesting about these two. And it's kind of strange because the rest, she interviewed 100, she attempted to interview 100 cab drivers.
Wow.
Only seven had these stories, but they're eerily similar to one another. And it's noted that the rest of the cab drivers refused to discuss it.
Not so they're not necessarily saying, that didn't happen
yeah.
to me. They were just like, yeah, and I don't want to talk about that.
Right.
That's interesting.
There are other accounts in that area of people driving past shops that are no longer there and seeing, like, people lined up outside to go into the shop.
Weird. So, like, the building is no longer there or
just,
yes. like, the business? Okay.
Because everything is, I mean, there was massive devastation.
Right.
Entire areas were just completely leveled. And it's so tragic. And it was sudden. And so that kind of begs the question, is this area more haunted because of what happened?
Right. Okay. So let's, real quick, preface what I think you're about to say by just quickly talking about what is the, like, recipe for a ghost or, like, a haunted location.
Well, that's highly debatable, but there are a lot of theories.
Right.
I just think that there's, like, a spiritual afterlife, and that ghosts can kind of just, they just exist as that next. People do. Not necessarily there are these set of rules like in a horror movie, but there are theories on unfinished business and...
Yeah, it seems like the prevailing one is people who don't realize that they're dead because they died suddenly, unexpectedly, or tragically.
Right.
And they are sort of... Their consciousness is left going like, wait, what happened? Like...
Right.
So, in an instance where there's a tsunami and it wipes out however many thousands of people all at once, I mean, it stands to reason that those people would be sort of confused by what has happened to them, and their energies or their consciousness would be left looking for a ride home.
It's also interesting that the cab drivers noted that the ghosts were young in age, because someone spoke on younger people who have passed away or died suddenly are seen more often in the area, because they make the argument that they would tend to be more confused about being in that state.
So isn't there a thing about when you pass away, your next dimensional self or wherever you go after you pass away is at a certain age, like younger, like 23 or something, or like the prime of your life? I wonder if maybe that has something to do with why the passengers of these taxi cab rides all seem to be younger in age.
Oh, interesting. I think some, there are some mediums who have said that that is the case as they know it, but I mean, who really knows? Then there wouldn't really be sightings of like elderly ghosts, and I think that there are.
Yeah, that's true. Just interesting to think about if a majority of the cases reported are of younger people, but also the point you made earlier about the, they just are not as wise to what might be going on around them.
Right.
So, that's super interesting.
I know. It's a really interesting and cool story, and not alone in areas of tragedy. One of the most covered, like, haunted places is also a little closer to home, but actually maybe not much closer to home. just the other direction. The Battle of Gettysburg, where that took place. The deadliest battle on American soil. And, like, all of the houses around there are said to be super haunted. And, like, most were used as makeshift hospitals.
Oh, yeah.
During the war.
Yeah. Brutal back then.
Right.
It was like, oh, you were injured in battle? That leg is coming off.
Yeah. Like, well, and just, like, random people in the homes would be suddenly...
Oh, yeah, just caught
tending
in crossfire.
To the wounds of soldiers in their houses. Like, come in here, let's put that arm back on.
Just sewing limbs back on.
Yeah, but that's actually one of the sightings in an area near the Battle of Gettysburg. It's one of the homes that was used as a makeshift, like, trauma center.
Right.
There's a man in uniform, Confederate soldier uniform, like, holding his arm and just, like, walks through.
Like, just looking for somebody to
reattach it. It's so crazy. So, yeah, and that would be a heightened state of trauma and tragedy, obviously.
Right. And emotion, too.
Right.
I wonder if, you know, all of those things combined are just, like, the perfect formula for more ghost activity, because that's another thing that is a popular belief, is that that sort of thing is fueled by, you know, anger and frustration and sadness and...
Right, there's a lot in the air to charge it.
Right.
And then a lot of sudden deaths to lead to that kind of confusion of passing on.
Yeah. So I think that's the key to it, really, is the sudden and traumatic part of it.
Right.
Is like somebody just going about their day, I'm just being a soldier on the battlefield, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden, because you don't realize that you've been, you know, stabbed by a bayonet and died instantly.
Because you're kind of in the, I mean, you have to be just in the moment.
Right.
And not really, not that conscious or mindful of yourself.
Yeah.
In battle.
Yeah, that's, have you ever seen the movie What Dreams May Come?
Yes, Robin but Williams. I don't like it because it's too existential for me and it gives me like major anxiety attacks.
Yeah, I love that movie.
Yes, and it's an excellent film. I just can't.
The portrayal of the afterlife in that movie is like, for me, like what I feel like it actually is. But there's like a part of the movie where he, spoilers if you haven't seen it, he is responding to a car crash. He's a doctor, the main character, and he gets killed on the scene by another vehicle that crashes into the crash, I guess. But he sees his own death, like, from above. Like, his consciousness views it, and then he kind of gets, like, whisked away into the next... I don't know. That's kind of a weird tangent. But I'm just thinking of the soldier on the battlefield, like, being killed in battle and then witnessing all those events occurring around him. Like, his spirit or whatever, seeing that, and just being, like, confused as, like, what do I do? Where am I?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
That's just so crazy to think about, and I don't want to get too far into that, but...
Well, no, I think that's interesting. Like, there are areas of mass tragedy, like, we're kind of scoping in on here, but also any sudden tragedy would feed that as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, you think of any, you know, semi-famous haunted house where, what's her name? Is it Lizzie Borden?
Yeah.
It's like, her house is famously haunted because a bunch of people were axe murdered there.
Right.
And that's the same thing, like asleep in your bed and then axe murdered to death. Right. And then
it's negative.
And now you're a ghost.
Like charged.
Yeah.
Because of the energy in the air when that happens as well.
Right. So, in our preliminary discussion about disasters and those being sort of focused areas of paranormal activity, I found this really kind of cool story. I mean, it's interesting. I don't know if it's cool, but about this steam liner called the Eastland, the SS Eastland. It kind of leads into some other really cool things that affect us in current times too, or pretty recent anyway. So it was 105 years ago. The SS Eastland was a steamliner boat that would ferry people across a lake to like a park area. And okay. So the history goes that on July 24th, 1915, employees of the Western Electrical Company in Chicago, they were having a company picnic and they loaded all 2,500 employees onto the steamliner, which was sort of historically known to list when it became top heavy. And in boating terminology, when a boat lists, that means it's falling to one side or the other.
Oh, right.
Right. And so they load all these people on, and within about 15 minutes of getting everybody onto the boat, it starts to drift over away from the
dock side,
right into the water. And within about 58 minutes, 844 people, men, women, and children, had drowned. Because the boat, like, the amount of time that it took it to go from upright to sideways in the water was so fast that they didn't even have time to react. And a lot of people were in the boat.
And, like, trapped.
Just chilling, you know, right. Like, we're going to the picnic, hooray! And then all of a sudden, they're underwater.
That's so horrifying.
It's so crazy. That's like, I mean, faster than the Titanic sank, and that boat hit a giant iceberg in the water.
Right.
And, like, cracked open.
Well, yeah, capsizing is nuts.
All the, like, panic and terror and tragedy just charged that area, right?
Yeah, so what are the ghost stories around it?
So, shortly after, the boat was recovered and then sold off and was docked at a nearby bridge. Let's see. Hold on.
You've got some notes.
I have notes. So it was docked in a nearby bridge for, like, holding purposes. Mm-hmm. Until it was on to its next thing. And it was, you know, repaired and refurbished and all that. And there was a caretaker who lived on the boat just to make sure that there was no vagabonds.
Ye old caretaker.
Ye old caretaker.
Let's call him...
Captain M.L. Edwards.
Okay.
What's his name? Actually a captain.
Okay.
But he would...
So he's ranked up from caretaker for sure.
Yeah.
That's a level up.
I don't know if that was part of the caretaking experience. He started as caretaker and worked his way up the ranks, which was a short journey because it was just the one guy.
Mm-hmm.
He would get woken up in the middle of the night by, like, screaming and moaning and, like, pounding on the hull. And
like people are trapped.
Like people
there.
Like let that, me out of here.
That just gave me chills.
Yeah.
Cause that is jacked up.
Terrifying.
I hate that.
And he was like, nope, it's just an old boat, it's creaking.
Just a creaky old
ship.
I'm
going back to sleep. The sound of people screaming is what boats sound like when they're old boats. I don't know.
No, that's horrifying. Like,
so,
that's different than just ghost stories, because the panic, because those are, like, ghosts in turmoil.
Right. Yeah, like, people stuck, like we talked about in an earlier episode about residual hauntings.
Right.
Of people just, like...
going through the motions.
That moment in time just looping.
Yeah.
You know? And that's their loop, is like, no, not...
So
not
I would hope that that's not their loop.
Right.
Like, it is, but their actual soul has moved on somewhere else, and that's just the imprint of the tragic moment.
I absolutely hope that that's true.
Yeah,
because otherwise, that's the saddest, most terrifying thing of
or
all time.
Whoever that is, fully, that's their hell, and they fully deserve it.
Could be, yeah.
By being, like, the worst human possible during life, because really, who deserves? Like, that is, like, perpetually stuck there.
Yeah.
No. Nope. That's the worst.
So, another thing to note there also, while the boat was docked at that bridge, is that people crossing over the boat would just be, like, suddenly filled with dread, and they would be, like, hustling across that bridge.
Interesting.
Like, they would not... It was just uncomfortable to be there.
Right.
You never would see people, like...
like, just chilling.
Just standing at the bridge, like, admiring the sights. They would
move along.
There and be like, nope, this bridge is not for me. I'm gonna
cross to the other side.
Keep it going. So that was the boat itself being haunted, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the location on the Chicago Pier area, there's a couple of cafes and restaurants and stuff, like lining the water's edge there. And there's one cafe specifically where people will be just enjoying their lunch, and the water will come up over the side of the walkway. But there will be nothing there to disturb the water. Like, there will... I mean, it's not unusual to have, like, a boat or something cruise through...
create some wake.
And create wake, right? And that sloshes up onto the walkway. But in these cases, there's nothing. So it's like, is
that...
that's
interesting.
The, like, the lake residual waves coming up from the boat listing?
Hard to say.
Who knows?
I would want to study that, because I feel like that would be easy to debunk. If it were able to be debunked.
Right. So, apply science.
Right.
Figure that out. People at the restaurant have also reported, though, splashing and screaming sounds happening from the water. And, oh, someone's drowning. And they look out there and the water's just calm. There's nobody out there.
Hope there's nobody out there.
Yeah. Except for the poor trapped souls of the SS Eastland.
Or whoever keeps drowning out there, and they're just thinking, oh, that must just be the,
must be
the
ghost
drownings.
Because
now they are ghost drownings.
It's Chicago. Isn't there a mob scene there?
Perpetual.
So it's just
oh, no.
People swimming
they're
with
not
the going
to listen to them. They're going to think these are the ghosts.
Listen, Bobsy, we got to dispose of some bodies.
Oh,
throw
no.
Throw them in the haunted lake.
Don't mind those screams. Those are just the ghosts of the... the old steamliner.
So this one's super creepy. Just one more little, like...
I can tell by your face. You guys can't see his face, but by the look on his face, I feel like I'm not going to be able to go to sleep after this.
No, you're not, because you're going to picture this.
No,
and...
stop. Okay.
Okay.
I'm going to make you stay awake.
So, on top of splashing and screaming, people will look over the edge... into the water and see faceless reflections that are not their own.
But someone drowning beneath the water.
People that were stuck under the pier side.
I don't like it.
Like looking back up.
I don't like it.
From the water.
At all. Kind of want to see it.
Yeah. You do?
Yeah.
but then you don't.
But then not so much.
Okay, fast forward now to modern times. So this took place 105 years ago, right?
Okay.
Since then, the whole area has been redone. And you know Oprah Winfrey?
I know, yes.
Know of her?
I know of her. I wish we were cool like that, but...
Oh, yeah.
We haven't met just yet.
Our friend Opes. So the Oprah Winfrey Show studio, where they film her show on The Daily. Well, actually, I don't think her show is on anymore.
It's not.
Maybe it is. But it comes and goes.
Harpo Studios. She has some other shows going on and other productions.
Guess where it's built?
In Chicago, I know that.
Yeah, right on the pier.
Oh.
Where the Eastland...
What? But why?
It's real nice there.
Okay.
This time of year. I don't know. So, in her studio, there are dozens of reports of people in period clothing wandering the halls, and then when approached, they vanish.
Huh.
Also reports of moaning and wailing and screaming and...
No, see? No.
Throughout the halls of her studio.
I would definitely rather see someone than hear disembodied moaning and screaming.
You get a ghost, and you get a ghost, and you get a ghost.
Oh, no.
I can't. That's just the craziest thing, man.
Yeah.
The thing that I love the most about that is that people are still seeing... I mean, I guess the ghosts, they don't really, like, go away. I mean, usually ghosts are, like, old, you know, period.
Yeah.
Type people. But it's just interesting that it's still happening and those ghosts are there even though the whole place has changed.
Yeah. I mean, that's just how ghosts work sometimes.
The environment has changed, but they... I wonder if the ghosts...
Are aware,
or if they're confused by it, or...
Well, that, you know, is... I mean? Like, yeah, that's one of the big questions in this business.
Answers.
Well, we've got to talk to them to get answers.
But I'm nervous about it, because...
Well, just not here. Elsewhere. Let's go to Harpo Studios.
Uh-huh.
Start asking around.
Okay. Maybe we can go to the Oprah Winfrey Show and...
She doesn't... We talked about this. It's not the show anymore.
By the time we get there...
It'll be back on.
It'll be back on.
Okay.
I'm sure of it. She can't make up her mind. I'm retired. I'm not retired. It's Oprah. Nobody gets mad. She does what she wants.
She does what she wants. Deservedly so.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That is crazy. Same ghosts 100 years later.
Mm-hmm. So that's all I got on that. But we recently... And by recently, it was like... What, a year ago? Almost exactly a year ago, actually. We went and visited my mom in Hawaii, but we made a stop at Pearl Harbor, which, if you're not familiar, was another site of mass tragedy and death.
That was interesting, because we're both history buffs. We're on vacation. It was, Hawaii, so bright, sunny day. And it was sort of a last-minute stop before we went to the airport to head to a different island. And the level of intensity that hit us, but especially Joss, when we weren't really expecting it, was really insane. Like, we walked in with our daughter, our nieces and nephews, and we had the whole family there, and it was just going to be like a fun, interesting outing to go, you know, get some sunshine, get some lunch.
Learn some stuff.
Yeah, see some history. And it hadn't really... It was such a last-minute decision that we didn't really even talk to our daughter about, like, what we were about to see. And, you know, we didn't get really serious about it just yet. And so it was really strange that we went from, like, smiling and playing around and worrying about parking and checking our bags and kind of just going through the motions of the day to walking in. And in this specific spot, it was as if we just hit a wall.
Yeah, we hadn't even done any of the...
We didn't do the tour. We didn't go into the museum
exhibits yet.
You're right. We were both walking and we looked at each other and kind of knowingly, we knew what one another was feeling. And the air was just super thick with dread and intense anxiety all of a sudden. It was so strange.
Yeah, I've never really felt anything like that before.
It was weird. So I had felt that level of dread and anxiety before. I mean, I'm an anxious person in general, but this is a different feeling. You can tell that it's like someone else's anxiety at this point.
It doesn't feel like your own feelings.
Right. I had felt that once before, authentically, when we were part of a ghost tour. And they were discussing when, in that spot we were standing, historically, there were hangings of indigenous people of the area.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were blamed for something that had happened on the land and hanged for it. And I almost passed out.
Yeah, I remember that. That was, like, intense.
Yeah. I suddenly, like, my knees buckled and I was, like, woozy. The air was extremely heavy and full of dread. Now, what's interesting is that could be a psychological response to hearing of something of that tragic nature,
mm-hmm.
and having just natural, my human empathy and outrage at the atrocities that took place there. It was also during a ghost tour. Everything was very authentic but theatrically laid out before you. It's part of it to kind of
into the mood.
So that's what's interesting about the Pearl Harbor Day is while we know, you hear Pearl Harbor, you know what it is. We just weren't really set to kind of take it on like that. We were just going through our daily motions of being on vacation. And it was just so interesting that we look over at each other. And Joss was in, like, full-on panic.
I was crying. Just tears. Like, yeah. I couldn't. And I didn't even know. I think that was the most confusing thing for me is, like, why am I crying right now?
Yeah.
Because we, you know, like I was saying, we hadn't even...
We didn't think about it yet.
Yeah.
It just hit us before we had... Yeah.
Learn about what had actually happened there. Like,
right.
You know, we've seen the movies or whatever, and so we knew kind of the story of what was going on. But, like, and as we were going through, and, you know, they have it kind of set up there where you do each exhibit, and it's like the first one is the months or weeks leading up to Pearl Harbor happening, and, like, what was going on in the area. And they talk, there's, like, all this cool stuff about spies and espionage and all this cool stuff.
The museum part.
Yeah. And then as you go through to the next exhibit, they're like, okay, well, this is what happened on the day at this exact moment. And there's all these artifacts and...
And that gets you kind of, like, primed to be really thinking of the gravity of everything. Because you,
right.
you put yourself in their shoes and their time. But we were just standing out in open space when we first started. We didn't go into the museum. We were standing out in open space. I look over at you because I had been hit by this energy field, and I look over to you and you're crying.
Yeah.
Like, immediately. It was all in a matter of a few minutes. It was so strange. And we were just trying to catch up to our kids.
Yeah. Because
our nieces and nephews were ahead of us, walking toward the water area where you overlook...
The harbor.
The harbor. One of the ships is there, and then obviously the Arizona Memorial is out in the distance.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just so weird. So we... collected ourselves, we went through the exhibits, we made sure we paid, you know, attention to the gravity of everything, we told the kiddos we were with, like,
mm-hmm.
why it was serious, and it turned out to be really nice, like, learning for them, watching them learn about the things and go through the exhibits with us. Now, the interesting part is, after this visit to Pearl Harbor, we had to rush to the airport, and before we got on our flight, Joss called his dad. Now, Joss wears a necklace with dog tags on it every single day.
Yeah, it's my great-grandpa's dog tag from World War II.
Which you wear every day and without really thinking about that much anymore. It's just part of your...
Yeah, it's like a family heirloom. So, I, you know, wear it with honor and pride of, like, this is part of my family. But without even realizing it.
He calls his dad to check in. So we're about to board the flight to Kona. And we had just had this intense experience at Pearl Harbor. And he was really, you know, glad we went to see Pearl Harbor before we left the island. And said, you know, your great-grandpa was there that day. And it clicked with Joss. The dog tags he was wearing. Now, his great-grandpa survived the attack on Pearl Harbor.
Right.
However, he existed there in that moment wearing those dog tags that Joss walked in wearing that day onto the Pearl Harbor site.
Yeah.
So that was interesting.
I hadn't really even, I mean,
that's just cool alone, even without it being linked to anything paranormal. The fact that the last time those dog tags were there...
Right.
...was during the attack of Pearl Harbor. And you walked in wearing them and immediately started crying.
Yeah.
silent, like,
yeah,
having the heavy feeling of anxiety and doom.
And there's a lot of theories in the paranormal world about, you know, not only are locations haunted, quote-unquote, mm-hmm. but also objects.
Right, and imprints on objects, not necessarily hauntings of objects, but, like, that they're charged
somehow. Energies. And, I mean, the events of that day, of course, were absorbed into the objects that were there and the surrounding, including...
Or that was just, like...
My dog tag.
Yeah, something that added to the connection, especially since, I mean, you weren't even just wearing, like, I don't know, your grandpa's wristwatch.
Yeah.
It was linked to his military reason for being there.
It's like a symbol of his...
Service. During the attack.
It's crazy.
I'm really glad we went.
Yeah, that was not only for the, like, paranormal enthusiast, but, like, the history part of it and, like, the artifacts that they have there.
Wow, yeah.
There, I mean, there was just certain things that you would go and look at, and I don't know if anybody else besides us in our group were that emotionally
affected by
each. But and maybe it's just something that we recognized and we were able to, like, articulate that a little bit better. But there was one story specifically that, for whatever reason, just, like, stuck out in my mind of, like, when the bombers were coming through, most of the soldiers on the ground, they weren't armed with anything other than just, like, their sidearms that, you know, their handguns that were part of their uniform. They wore that in a pistol
holster. Right, because they weren't expecting an attack.
Yeah, and so they were returning fire on Japanese fighter planes with handguns.
With sidearms.
And there was there was one in a case that was, like, this was likely used during the attack.
That's so crazy.
Just, I don't know, just something about that specifically really stuck out to me.
Well, the interesting part about, besides just the amplified energy of the trauma and the intensity of an attack like that and a tragedy like that, is because the Arizona was encapsulated, like that ship you spoke about earlier, it sank, and souls were trapped inside of it.
Yeah.
There is a theory in the paranormal world that water...
Yeah.
I mean, it's not even just in the paranormal world. Like, water
is conductive
of energy. So there's a theory in the paranormal world that extends that to water is conductive of paranormal energy as well. And so it amplifies it. It provides that charge. So not only are these tragedies, but they're on water.
Interesting and unplanned. But all of the events that we've spoken about today all took place over water or, like, near water.
Yeah. Yeah, we did not plan. That was a completely authentic sequence.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, I don't know. Another thing that I would like to experience, having experienced that feeling in Pearl Harbor, is, like, I want to travel to Gettysburg. Like, another site of such raw emotion and tragedy. Not, I don't want to go there because of the emotion and tragedy, but the history of it. We love history, and just to see if, like, we pick up on that same feeling there, you know, it would just be such an experience.
Yeah, because, I mean, while I believe that hauntings are just sort of all around us in some form or another, because I believe that there's either just, like, a spiritual dimension or afterlife, and we just continue existing in another way. We have yet to really visit many sites specifically because they're haunted.
Right.
Or known to be haunted, or have experienced the tragedy. We've seen a few, and one of them, not really on for the purpose of paranormal reasons. So, yes, we definitely need to go with that in mind. Like, what are we going to experience, and what can we pick up on a paranormal level?
Yeah, yeah. So we're getting towards the end here. We're about to our time. So do you want to do For a Fright?
Yes. So this episode, my For a Fright recommendation is World's Most Unexplained on the Travel Channel Network. I watch it on Hulu. Each episode is a different theme, but it just covers, like, unexplained mysteries that are, a lot of them are linked to the paranormal or something psychological, or they have, like, alien activity, crop circles.
Oh, yeah, so that's that show that we watched about the crop circles.
Yeah, you watched the crop circle one
with me. Yeah, that was very cool.
What's really cool is the episode that aired on 11/4, they covered the paranormal activity in the White House.
Oh, what?
Which I covered on our episode in my intro, like a week or so before that.
Oh, that's super crazy.
Yeah, it was really cool to see, and a lot of the accounts were, you know, ones that I had shared and researched and,
that's neat.
And written about, so it was kind of cool to see the validation of that.
Yeah, you're on the right track there for sure. That's cool.
But yeah, they have a lot of really cool stuff, and it is very interesting because it kind of links that history, documentary feel with the paranormal, so.
Right, that's right, right up our alley, yep. For sure.
Definitely my vibe. So, World's Most Unexplained, Travel Channel Network.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. I need to watch, you have been watching those, like, in the morning as you're getting ready, so.
Yeah, I can't wait and watch everything with you. Because don't have any of my own shows.
I mean, I watched The Boys on Amazon Prime without you, so.
Okay. I guess so, that's fine. Well, we hope you've had a frightful time with us here on Fright Life, a paranormal podcast.
Don't forget to, if you have a crazy paranormal story, we're still collecting those, and we'd love to do an episode soon. That's just friends and family and listener write-ins.
Listener accounts.
Yeah, that'd be super fun. So get a hold of us at frightlifeparanormal@gmail.com. You can also send us a direct message on Instagram or Facebook. We're at frightlifeparanormal.
And give us a follow there as well.
Yeah, follow us.
Thanks for listening.
Take care, guys.